at least 6 central banks this week, but how many of them will make a move? Maybe just one, and in the opposite direction to everybody else. But in most cases, it's less about what's done, because probably not very much. It's more about what's said, as we see inflation taking longer and more banks delaying cuts. But for how long? That's what everyone wants to know. Will we be any the wiser by the end of the week? You'd hope so, wouldn't you? It's Monday, the 18th of March, 2024. It's the Morning Call from NAB. Good morning. Well, the US dollar rose 0.7% last week. A small bit of that was on Friday. The Aussie fell 0.3% on Friday to 65.6 US cents. That is almost 1% down over the week. The big move on currencies on Friday was the yen, down 0.5% to down 1.3% over the week last week. And equity-wise, Friday was another bad one for the United States. The NASDAQ down 1%, 0.5% for the Dow, 0.7% down for the S&P. But let's remember that even with that fall, the S&P gained 2.2% over the last month. And shares are down in Europe as well, not quite as much as in the US. The ASX 200 down 0.6% on Friday. That's a 2.25% fall over the week last week. And bond yields pushing higher still, although nowhere near as much as, you know, what we saw on Thursday in the United States. But still another 2 basis points added to 10-year treasuries, creeping higher, pushing them up to 4.31%. Remember, just after Christmas, we were down below 3.8%. So there's a clear move, isn't there? And yields, we're up just 1 or 2 basis points in Europe as well, up 8 basis points on Friday in Australia, but that was the follow-through from the US the day before to 4.13%. Now on futures, just a few basis points higher than that, up to around 4.16%. And we saw oil starting to push higher last week. In fact, Brent went from 82 to about 85.3 with just a small drop on Friday, and iron ore closed below 100 on Friday as well. So here's NAB's Rodrigo Cotrill in Sydney this morning. So equities quite a bit lower on Friday. So has the AI bubble reached its natural inflation point, or is there going to be more to come? Because if you look at the big losers on Friday, I mean, Amazon down 2.4%, Microsoft down 2.1%, Google down 1.5%, although Nvidia, interestingly, only down 0.1%. So it's fared better than most last week, despite its massive recent gains. I guess it's because there's a chip shortage. Everyone wants chips. But, you know, generally, the tech sector seems to have reached its natural limit for now, anyway.
Morning, Phil. Yes, worth also highlighting that this is the second week of losses for the S&P 500 as well. So it's certainly an ease in terms of the appetite for equities in the US market. I think it's obviously this been one of the big factors has been the repricing of Fed rate cut expectations, given the string of strong CPI-related releases. You know, we had the CPI, the PPI, and then we'll talk about the input prices as well on Friday. So it certainly has pushed back these expectations that the Fed is imminently ready to cut rates, and that obviously has implications for risk appetite too.
Yeah, and then on the Japan front, I mentioned the movement we saw in the yen on Friday. So the Rengo Union says its members have secured wages with rises of almost 5.3%, which is the most in 30 years. So what does that mean for the Bank of Japan, which, of course, is meeting this week?
Yeah, the rise has been super impressive because, you know, in the past, usually, you know, the unions ask for something and then they get like half or a little bit more than half of what they ask for. And this time, at least in terms of this first survey, which tends to be heavy in terms of the larger firms, those demands have been met almost to the T. And obviously the rise of wages growth about 5%, which is one of sort of the conditions, if you like, that the bank had set out. It's very punchy and plays to the view that the bank may well lift the cash rate as soon as Friday. And, you know, we had Nikkei reports and other newspapers also suggesting that they will be lifting the cash rate. And then there's a little bit of confusion around what actually the report is saying, because back in February, we had Deputy Governor Yuichida talking about the idea that if you move the cash rate by 0.1%, so that's the on excess reserves, then you move the uncollateralized call range from 0 to 0.1. And the reports from newspapers are saying that the cash rate will move from 0 to 0.1. So it's a range. So it's a little bit of confusion of how much is actually the cash rate going to go up by. Is it going to go up by 0.1 or is it going to go up by 0.2? So my sense is that the the cash rate will go up by 0.1, and the uncollateralized range will move from negative 0.1 to 0 to 0 to 0.1, if that makes sense.
Clear as mud. So, and yield curve control, what do they do on that? Do they stop that?
Yeah, so there's a general sense that in terms of this shift away from ultra-easy policy, the yield curve control will end. But importantly, though, the quantitative easing will not. So the bank will retain the ability to control particularly the back end of the curve, particularly bearing in mind that, you know, a shift in policy may well rattle markets a little bit, and it gives them the optionality, if you like, to step in and control any sudden movements in the back end of the curve.
So it's just less rigid then, is that the idea?
It's worth highlighting, though, that from a practical sense, yield curve control has been, essentially hasn't been a restraint on 10-year yields for quite some time. The same time, 10-year Treasury, 10-year JGBs have not tested that 1% level. They came close back in November, but now they're trading at 0.78, I think it is. So, in theory, we yield curve control around 1%. So we don't think that it's likely to see a knee-jerk reaction in the back end of the curve.
Given that they haven't got there.
The last point to make on that is that we got to remember that the Bank of Japan has also been buying equity ETFs. And of course, the Nikkei and Topix have been performing extremely well in the past, over 12 months, 18 months. So there's also a general sense that they will remove that ETF buying as well.
Right. They're not the ones who've been buying Bitcoin ETFs either. That might explain a lot about what happened last week. So look, we've got lots of central banks this weekend. We've got the Bank of Japan, we've got the RBA, we've got the FOMC, we've got the Bank of England, we've got the Norge Bank and the Swiss National Bank. We'll talk about all of those in a moment. But first of all, China on Friday, we finally got those loan numbers. So loans are up 10.1% year on year in February. That's down from year to January. It's been steadily falling, hasn't it, for months now, and yet also house prices down 1.4% year on year. You'd sort of be hoping that the PBOC would do something like lowering the medium lending facility, but they didn't. They left it unchanged.
Yeah, they did. And I suppose a couple of things to note there. Because of those distortions that occur around the Lunar New Year holiday, sort of a better way of measuring the change is over the period of January and February, and then comparing it to previous periods. Bank Capital Economics, which we follow quite closely, they provide quite a lot of information for us. They note that bank loan growth rate decelerated to the lowest on record in February, if you measure the January and February period as a one. Similarly, important to note as well that lending to corporates also slowed down while lending to households contracted. So again, it's a reminder of what's going on in China, that it's really the government that is only interested in borrowing money, whilst corporates and households remain very, very, very restrained. And again, the decline in house prices, which was the ninth consecutive month decline, gives you the key problem there, that people remain very, very concerned in terms of what's going on in the property sector and how it affects their well-being
the whole wealth effect, and some of them may be on negative equity, for example, as well. Not physically having the money to spend.
So to answer your question then, there's a general sense that because of the holiday period, the spending that the government has planned hasn't really kicked in, particularly in terms of this acceleration of government bond issuance, which is expected to now occur. So I think the market will be very sensitive to what happens to that dynamic over coming weeks. And if you don't see a material acceleration in terms of government bond issuance, then there's going to be major concerns around what's going on in terms of the government's commitment to lift that growth rate towards 5% this year. So that will be very important. Of course, we also get activity readings today in China, which again will give us a good sense of where things are at the moment.
Yeah, so unemployment, retail sales, industrial production, fixed asset investment. Yeah, the trend's not looking good, is it? So it's going to be interesting to see what that does bring today. So, and US trade data, we got that on Friday as well. Tell us briefly about that. So obviously in terms of the numbers, but also prices. Yeah.
So we had a few important data releases, or relatively important data releases in the US. But the last sort of, if you like, piece of the puzzle ahead of the PCE print, we had that strong CPI and then strong PPI. And now we had stronger than expected import prices, which have been increasing for a couple of months now. And then I suppose the important takeaway there is when you look at imported core consumer goods, they have continued to climb, and they're kind of reversing that decline that we saw towards the end of the year. And it's a sort of small little warning there that the disinflation trend that we're seeing in goods in particular is starting to slow. So that's been the big driver of the headline and core readings coming down. Whilst services inflation has remained elevated. So this lever that's been lowering the core reading, if you like, is now stopped decelerating. So that will be important in terms of dynamics when we look ahead.
And the inflation expectations in the Michigan Consumer Sentiment Survey stuck at 3% a year out as well, and at 2.9% 5 years out. So the consumers aren't expecting any big fall in inflation at all.
Yeah. So again, that idea that the last bit of decline in terms of that level of inflation is always the hardest, and it's just showing now in the data that it seems to be the case again.
Yeah, and meanwhile, we're seeing more softness as well. I mean, I know these regional surveys are a bit all over the place, but the New York Empire State Manufacturing Index may be another sign, because the headline number was expected to be -7. It actually came in from -2.4 in February to -20.9 in March. So, but I mean, having said that, you know, January was -43.7. So these, it is a bit of a yo-yo, isn't it?
It is. It's a volatile survey, but certainly in terms of the trend, it is showing that sort of slowdown, or if you like, weakness. Now, in general, so I suppose the other takeaways when you think about the recent data releases in the US are, yes, inflationary pressures are still there, but at the same time, there's evidence that the consumer is slowing down. We had those, you know, relatively weak retail sales numbers. And then also the NFIB survey also showed a cooling, particularly in terms of those labor market indicators as well. So it's a combination where inflation remains elevated, but the consumer is now showing signs of weakness, which is also corroborated by some potential weakness coming in the labor market as well.
So today, well, first off, we get New Zealand's Performance of Services Index. We do have that China data that you talked about. We get the Melbourne Institute's Inflation Expectations Survey. Is that useful? Does the RBA pay much attention to that? I mean, it was stuck at 4.5% last month, so that is high.
It's not something that moves the market. It's certainly something that economists have a look at, and always looking for, you know, an outside move. And at the moment, expectations are for not a big change there. So I don't think it's going to rattle the market or change at all the thinking of the RBA at the moment.
Okay. And the final read of the euro area inflation numbers for February as well. And the ECB, one of the few central banks that's actually not meeting this week, but let's go through the full list. So I think I've got this right. Tuesday, the RBA. It seems strange, doesn't it, talking about the RBA in the middle of the month, but there we are. That's how it is now. Plus the Bank of Japan. Thursday, this is all Australia time, the Fed, the Bank of England, the Swiss National Bank, and the Norge Bank. We've talked about the Bank of Japan. What about all the others? Are we going to see any moves at all, do you think?
I don't think so. You know, the RBA, of course, is widely expected to remain unchanged and also retain that mild tightening bias. And then when we move to the Fed, I think there obviously no changes expected there either. But the sort of the major concern, if you like, is whether there's any change in guidance, particularly in terms of those dots. Will they still show 3 rate cuts this year, or will the recent data, you know, maybe shift that dot towards 2? So that would be, I suppose, the major concern for the Fed. And then the other ones, the European ones, are expected to remain unchanged for now.
Right. So it is all just in the what's said alongside it. How much longer? Higher for how much longer? And that is the question everybody is asking right now. Hopefully we'll have a clearer idea of that by the end of the week. Good to talk, Rodrigo. And thanks for giving up this morning. I don't know if you're watching the football. Very disappointing if you come from, you know, if you're born in the city I was born in.
On the other side, very, very, very happy if you on the other side.
Exactly. Good luck to you. All right. Okay. Anyway. Bad start to the week. We'll catch you soon. Thanks.
Cheers, Phil. Thanks.
Talking soccer, of course. Where is Ted Lasso when you need him? That's it for the Morning Call this Monday morning. I'm Phil Dobby for now. Back again tomorrow morning. Thanks for tuning in.